Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 23 of the Football. My name is Jeff Crisco, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Mr. Mike Valverde. Mike, how is your Friday evening going?
My Friday evening is going great. It's going as great as Derrick Henry running over every single Jaguar he ran into.
Welcome to the Derrick Henry Show, starring Derrick Henry. He will get 50% of his fantasy production on the season in one night.
Yeah.
So you know, everybody's seen his 99-yard touchdown run this morning that it didn't seem like it was real, but it was real enough that I believed it. Where somebody tweeted out, per NFL Next Gen stats, Jalen Ramsey's top speed on the run was 3.1 miles per hour. And I was like, you know, I believe that because that wasn't really a great Derrick Henry run. I mean, it was a good one, but that tackling was, boy, that Jags defense gave up.
Yeah, it was pretty embarrassing to see exactly. It was almost like he was invisible. There he is. Oh no, where'd he go? And it was incredibly to watch how bad a tackling can be performed on a single player.
Oh yeah, it was like he was a Nightcrawler from the X-Men. He just
exactly.
You go to tackle him, just poof, poof, and he would reappear somewhere else. Like it was just, that game was not great. And Derrick Henry's pretty much the story of it, because if you played Derrick Henry, congratulations, you're getting to the second round of your playoffs. If you played against Derrick Henry, my condolences, you're not getting to the second round of the playoffs. He was pretty much the story of Thursday Night Football. Pretty much everybody else, it seemed, was kind of disappointing. Titans defense was good. My sister continues her magical first season ever playing fantasy football. She had the Titans defense, and the Derrick Henry owner benched him against her. So So I have to like explain to her that it's not, she's 10. I think she was 10-2, 10-3. Dang. I have to explain to her. I have to be like, it's not going to be this easy every year. You have to understand that. Right. but yeah, like she got, she ended up with, James Conner, which was my recommendation, Drew Brees, Michael Thomas, Zach Ertz. She just ended, I think it's a 10 or 12 team lead. Yeah. She just ended up with this studly roster. And I'm like, you have to understand, it's not going to be this easy every year. Just as long as you know that. Oh, Melvin Gordon. So yeah, it's crazy. But, anyways, that's pretty much it about Thursday Night Football, right? I mean, if you played Leonard Fournette, he was okay. He was not good. Corey Davis pooped the bed. Jonnu Smith got hurt in the first quarter and was a non-factor. And that's not great for my playoffs in one league. So, Mike, how many leagues did you play in this year?
Redraft or Dynasty?
All told.
All total? Close to 50?
Close to 50?
Yeah.
Dude, I play in – how do you do waivers?
I normally do a daily thing where I go through everything all at one time and spend pretty much a day going through all my teams and stuff like that.
Dude, that's insane. So you have like literally every single player in the NFL, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Especially 50. Since most of them, or not most of them, but at least a good half, if not more, are IDP leagues. So, yeah,
man, I would say that.
I got pretty much everybody.
So what, you made the playoffs in like 30 leagues or something?
No. Close to probably like about 15 to 20.
Okay. Yeah, I mean that's pretty good. When you figure a bunch of those, I'm sure are dino leagues, and sometimes you know you aren't competing for like 2-3 years while you rebuild. So it's like, you know, what are you gonna do? So
yeah. And a lot of them I took over our teams that are – what I like to do, too, is take over teams that have been disbanded in Dynasty and sort of just try to retool it and put it all back together again.
You're the garbage man. You clean it up.
I clean it up. Yes, I do.
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah, I only played in 7 leagues because I guess I'm a filthy casual. But I made the playoffs in 4 of them.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, one's a I like to call it a dino light league because it's not really a dynasty league, but it's 8 keepers out of a 16 or 15 man roster. I mean, that's halfway between Dino and Keeper, and that's the only one that I knew I wasn't going to make the playoffs in because I was rebuilding in that. So not bad. Made it first year of a dynasty league, random public league I was in, the high school league with my boys from Sacramento, and then the Fishbowl knockoff we play in. So that's...
Did you get the playoffs in that one?
Yeah, I got a first round bye. I'm sitting pretty this week. I only have one matchup I have to worry about this week. So it's not bad because the public league, I have a bye. I have three byes out of the four teams that that made the playoffs. So not bad. This week's pretty relaxing for me. I'm not worried too much about what's going on. So
good.
Yep. So, alrighty. So we kind of jumped right into it. So what we do here, if this is your first time listening, is we come out, we record on Friday nights. We take a look at what happened on Thursday Night Football, although next week is going to be the last Thursday Night Football, I think. And then we give some sleepers for this weekend. We pick a guy at each position, and then we look forward at the weekend's games. And instead of the normal thing like, hey, start this guy, sit that guy, which we do some of that, we take a look at what we're looking at. So we're giving you the tools that what we're looking at, what might be actionable, what the people who, you know, write about this, what they're looking for, what they might think be actionable. So that's kind of what we do. I like to say it's like teaching somebody how to fish. So if you want to get right into it, we can start off with the QB sleepers. Who's your guy this week, Mike? Who is your quarterback sleeper?
My quarterback sleeper is Josh Allen.
Okay.
Yeah, and we know, and probably a good portion know that he is a terrible NFL quarterback. Just awful. But because this is fantasy football. And in fantasy football, you need points. It doesn't matter how they come, as long as you get the points. So in his last two games, Allen had 27 points versus Jacksonville and 32 versus Miami. So he's doing the points. A lot of that has to do with his damage with the run. And he has – this shocked me a little bit. He has 234 yards, rushing yards, in those last two games. So that's why those points are so high.
Mm-hmm.
In his last six, he's added at least 7 points to his fantasy production just by running the ball. So the last two weeks are anomaly. If you really want to get some solid, consistent groundwork, you're going to look at his 7 points plus in PPR. If this is standard, you're going to have to cut off some meat there. Also, the last 8 to 9 quarterbacks have scored 21 points versus the Jets, and that's exactly who he's playing this week. Allen was out in the first meeting, I think a couple of weeks ago, but even Matt Barkley, went for 21 points against the Jets. Even Nathan Peterman could probably put up at least 19 against this team. So that's saying a lot for Josh Allen. He's owned in 34% of the league, and he has pretty good soft schedule with Lions after this week, then Patriots, and then Dolphins to end the season. So I like that schedule as well.
Yeah, that's not bad. That was my sleeper too. And rather than try to shoehorn some other guy in, I'm just going to say that I very much agree with him, with Josh Allen. He's only 10% owned on Yahoo as of when I looked it up. And, for your rushing, point, he's faced two guys that have actually tried to run against him, Mitch Trubisky and Marcus Mariota, both went for 40 yards, against him. And, the only concern that's not really a concern is they cut Kelvin Benjamin this week, which doesn't matter.
Yeah, he wouldn't do anything anyways.
Yeah. Okay, so cool. I will just skip talking about my quarterback sleeper. And to make sure you don't steal it, I'm going to talk about my wide receiver sleeper, which is talked about him last week. it's Curtis Samuel, baby. He's back. I said, can we make it three out of four these last few weeks? So let's make it four out of five. Last week, he had a 6 for 88 line on 11 targets, and that was the most that he had all season. And the reason that I think he can keep it up this week is because of the loss of Greg Olsen. This is sort of what I picture happening. They stop messing around with Devin Funchess, give him a little bit of the Greg Olsen routes, though some are going to go to Ian Thomas, I think a good chunk are, and they're going to go more downfield with Curtis Samuel and with DJ Moore. I think they'll let those playmakers do the hard work because Cam's shoulder is messed up, so they don't want to have, you know, if you want 11 yards from Devin Funchess, you better throw the ball at least 10, because he's not getting much more than 1 or 2 yards after the catch. So that's why I'm thinking this week that Curtis Samuel, he's not going to have 11 targets again, but he's been averaging about 7 targets, so you know, recently. So that's a pretty good floor for targets for him. And the Browns have allowed 10 double-digit fantasy days to wide receivers in their last 7 games. And Denzel Ward has a concussion. Now, when I wrote this on Wednesday, he still hadn't been cleared. So he might be cleared. Concussions are so tricky that you don't know when a player will be cleared or if they will be cleared, because they can be cleared on Sunday morning before the game or never. And it looks like just this afternoon, they ruled him out for this weekend. So no Denzel Ward. Cornerback for the Browns, and so I think that'll be a big game for Curtis Samuel. So who are you looking at?
I actually like Curtis Samuel as well. I think that he's getting more and more involved with that Panthers offense for the last, God, even I think 2 or 3 weeks before you started promoting him. So yeah, I like that pick a lot. For finally, they're getting Samuel involved. I mean, he's such a dynamic playmaker. You're wondering why they didn't get it involved his rookie year and first, I don't know, quarter of this year. So,
I think that's a change in philosophy, because they're going more towards the smaller guys like Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore instead of Kelvin Benjamin and Devin Funchess and Greg Olsen. They're, you know, all big guy lineup. So I think that's a change in philosophy,
and it's a good one for sure. Yeah. Those guys were doing nothing. Now I have the pair with Allen. I have Zay Jones, and he's owned in 31% of the leagues. You know, his rookie season was just awful. Throughout college, he caught everything and anything, and then his freshman season comes along, or his rookie season, whatever you want to call it, and he couldn't catch anything. He dropped balls. He just looked awful out there. And in the first, I don't know, 4 or 5 games of this year, you could see some life in him, but it wasn't a lot. But now he's really starting to come on. And when you're now more in control in your destiny because of the release of Benjamin and oh God, who else? They released Benjamin and someone else. I forget who it was, but
he was inconsequential compared to Benjamin. So
yeah, Andre Holmes, that's who it was. Released both of those dudes. So, and I think a lot that has to do with the fact that Zay Jones has becoming more and more of a number one receiver, and they realize, well, we don't need either of these two fools. So off the boat you go. And Jones is averaging 7 targets, 4 receptions, and a touchdown in the last 3 weeks. His season, as I've been saying, has been inconsistent overall, where he's achieved in 4 games, he scored 11 points. But then on the flip side, you have 6 games with just 5 or less points. So very up and down roller coaster kind of season this year. Either he's really high or he's really low. With Josh Allen being healthy, being the number one receiver and playing against the Jets, I expect at least 11 points from him this week. Plus, if you do pick up Allen,
Is that in standard, half PPR, or PPR? You expect the 11 points in?
Oh, I would say PPR. Full point PPR.
So like 4 for 70? That sounds like a pretty good Zay Jones stat line.
Yeah, I would say something like that. 4470. Yeah, exactly. Something. Yeah, right on the nose. Or a touchdown, and you know, 4470 or 34, whatever. But yeah, I definitely see it happening. And then if you do pick up Allen, then you can have that Allen Jones connection. So in a deeper league, two quarterback league, that's a pretty nice setup for you if you have Allen and Jones. So that'd be nice.
And so here's the thing. I was actually going to talk about Zay Jones too. He was going to be my guy, but I audibled to Curtis Samuel since we had just talked about Josh Allen. So we're kind of on the same page this week. We like the Bills against the Jets, which is a weird sentence to say. The only thing that I would add to you, what you said about Zay Jones, I think that that's a phenomenal choice. I think that he's a great choice. 10% owned in Yahoo. The reason he's been doing so much better lately is his hands have gotten a lot better. He's caught over the last five games, 62% of his targets, which is a huge improvement on, I mean, he was a sub 50% guy last year, and he was continuing that trend earlier this year. So I like it. He's done a lot to improve on his biggest weakness, which has been his hands. So that's a good call, and I very much like that. And yes. And who is your running back this week?
My running back is, I'm going with a little homer pick and going with Nyheim Hines. And he's owned in 45% of the leagues. And, you know, I know that Marlon Mack is there, and definitely Mack is the lead dog. That is for sure. But if you're looking, this is sort of a streamer homer pick, actually. If you're looking at someone to flex out and you're in a PPR league and you're wanting those receptions to sort of boost your points, this is the guy to get. And he's last week he had 9 catches for 50 yards on 9 targets. He's a better runner than this, but against that Jags defense that came alive for one game, he got 4 carries for a miserable 5 yards. He's not really that bad, honestly. I mean, no running back is, but I would sort of throw that stat out. He has carved out a pass catching role for himself, which as I was saying, could be a nice flex option for your PPR leagues. And the other thing that I don't really like about him is that Colts have a tough schedule coming up, not only against Houston, but it just the rest of the league that they have is not looking good for them. And but you know, as I say, the Colts are going to find a way to get the ball to Nyheim Hines. And if you're looking for that possession receiver kind of guy for your flex that also runs the ball, this is the guy to get.
So, Nyheim Hines, I have one question for you. Just one question for you about Nyheim Hines. Really, it's about the Colts in general.
Sure.
What happened? What'd you guys do? What happened last week?
It was atrocious, man. It was a little mixture, I think. Number one is that they made some critical mistakes. So, for instance, they get a good play, right? But on that big play, they'd have holding. So there goes 25 yards off the board. Couple of bad officiating calls really hurt them, you know. But I'm not going to blame this on the officials when you don't score any points. I think that the major thing really is that they missed Jack Doyle. I mean, they did okay without Jack Doyle for a couple of games, and then but this game, I don't know what it was, but it just seemed like they missed that other option. And yeah, they really, talking about blanking the bed, they blanked the bed.
They blanked all. I think that they just need to get more targets to Eric Ebron. You know, I don't think 16 is enough. So I think that they need to get more. Give him 20 targets a game, and then maybe they'll score a touchdown. Because that's the thing. That's all they needed. They needed one touchdown.
And they actually came close. They had the ball at the 1 yard line earlier in the game, and they went for it on fourth down, and they got stopped. So
yeah,
but
that game I was watching a little bit, and it kept popping up. Probably my favorite little, they have a little stats pop up. Probably the favorite one I've ever seen pop up is they just kept repeatedly showing, there's the score, 3-0, 6-0, whatever. And it would pop up and it would say Colts points per game average. And it was like 32 or something. And it'd say today, zero. Like right next to the score. It was like, I could probably figure that out. Like they just kept showing it over and over. It's like on the TV, like 3 inches away. Like you don't even have to move your eyes. It's in the same little area of, the same little visual. It was just really funny. It kept popping up. But yeah, that game was, I was very happy. It ended up not really having any bearing on any of my matchups. It everything worked out okay. So
yeah, because the Jacksonville only scored 6 points. So either way you had, unless you have one of the defenses, then it really didn't really matter.
Yeah, and it was kind of a wash. I think I had Ebron. I didn't start Mac, but the other guy had, I think, like I think he started Carlos Hyde. So it was like, it was a lot. I mean, I got a ton of points because it's a, PPR league for Ebron, but I mean, Carlos Hyde was poopy. So yeah,
it was pretty bad.
So it was kind of a wash. So my running back this week is owned in 6% of Yahoo leagues. And I actually think he's going to get more touches than the hot pickup this week. I'm talking of Steven Ridley. Everybody, as I wrote this week, doused themselves in gasoline and ran screaming on fire towards their waiver wire to get Jalen Samuels. Samuels is going to be a neat play in Yahoo because you can play him at tight end. But as far as a running back, Chris Towers of CBS pointed out that if he ever had 13 carries in a game, he being Jalen Samuels, it was in high school. Because he hasn't had it yet this year. He never had it in college. So if it ever, and he didn't have granular data down to high school. So if he ever has done it, it was in high school. I mean, Samuels had more targets than runs in college, or he had more catches than runs in college. He's not your traditional running back. He's not your James Conner, between the tackles guy. He'll get the passing down stuff, but I think that you're looking at maybe 15 carries for Ridley and probably 8 carries, 5-6 targets to Samuels. I think everybody's super excited about the new hotness in the Pittsburgh offense, but I think it'll be a little bit more split than that. I know traditionally the Steelers don't have the split backfields. But I don't think that Jalen Samuels can carry the whole load. So if anybody would carry the whole load, it would be Ridley. And he's just not the new hotness. He's not the mystery box. Steven Ridley's Steven Ridley, but Jalen Samuels could be anything. He could even be Steven Ridley sort of deal. So it's like that has everybody all a Twitter. But I don't think that Samuels isn't gonna carry as much of the load as people think. And it's gonna be the Raiders rush defense. So it could be that Samuels takes 2 passes to the house. They're up, Juju gets a score, Antonio Brown gets a score, they're up 28-10. And then in the second half, it's just Steven Ridley running up the middle 4, 5, 6 yards at a time while they're running out the clock. So I think that he'll get I put, somewhere in the 60 to 70 yard range. Good shot at a score. And I based that on last year in week 17, he was running out the thing for the Steelers because they were resting Lev Bell for the playoffs. He had 80 yards on 17 carries. So he can do it in a pinch. He has done it in a pinch. And I think he will do it in a pinch this weekend. And I am starting him in a league. Granted, it's a league where no matter what happens this weekend, it doesn't matter because I've already secured the number one spot and it's a 14 playoff, but I'm still starting him this weekend.
I actually did look at Steven Ridley myself, and you're absolutely right about that whole thing. Whenever something is sort of just milling around, especially a rookie, and you know about him, but he hasn't had that opportunity yet to show off everybody, once he gets that opportunity, everybody's just like ants on a sugar cube. They're just all over it.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And obviously Ridley's sugar cube has depleted way before now. And there's really, really no interest there. So, but like you said, I don't know how much Samuels is going to get part of this, this offense. And, you know, he might actually get more receiving yards than he does actually rushing yards. So, but with Ridley, you know, I might as well. I mean, if that door's closed for Samuels, Ridley probably has an equal, if not better, shot at outproducing them.
Yeah, and the thing that really drives it is, I mean, do you know why he has? I mean, I'm sure you do, but why he has tight end eligibility on Yahoo?
You know, wasn't he listed as a tight end coming out of college or something?
Yeah, in the combine, he tested with the tight ends. In college, I mean, he was an H-back in college. So, you know, like a little Swiss Army knife, like a kind of halfback or kind of running back, kind of tight end. I mean, he was an H-back in college. But yeah, he tested with tight ends. He came out as a tight end. But the only thing that indicated he might be a running back was he was a running back in the Senior Bowl. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that are super salty that he's a tight end on Yahoo, but that decision makes sense to me. So, I mean, he was never even a running back for a full game. You know, he was a jack of all trades guy. So this whole Jalen Samuels is going to be a huge play this weekend at running back. It doesn't taste right to me. It doesn't make much sense to me.
Yeah, it's one of those inner things that it's hard to explain, but when you do fantasy football for a while and you're familiar with the game, you just sort of get a feel of what's going to happen. And I agree with you on that too. It's just like one of those things where it's just, yeah, he can be there, but I just doesn't feel right to me that he's going to be able to explode, be able to do what Connor does and those kind of things.
Yeah. And I think that's what it is, Le'Veon Bell did it and nobody knew what James Connor was going to do. And then James Connor did it. And so, you know, maybe the third string guy will be this good too, which we've, you know, people have anointed Samuels as the third string guy because he's plays more than Ridley, because he's more versatile and he does special teams. So he's active more than Ridley when Ridley's just a straight backup. It's like, yeah, it just doesn't feel right. It's hard to explain. You're right. It's ineffable. So alrighty. And then your sleeper tight end this week, not Jalen Samuels on Yahoo. Who's your sleeper tight end this week?
No, I actually have someone's probably owned just about as much, and that is Ian Thomas.
Are you freaking kidding me, dude?
Why?
I was like, all right, Mike's not gonna have Ian Thomas. He's gonna have CJ Uzoma. All right, talk about Ian Thomas and then I'll put in my 2 cents.
Uh oh. You went with Thomas too?
Yeah.
So
three of our guys were the same this week, basically, because I audibled out of Curtis Samuel. So Josh Allen, Zay Jones, Ian Thomas. Here's your football absurdity podcast guarantee. They're going to combine for like 14 points. So yeah. Since they're sleepers, so tell me about Ian Thomas.
And okay. So basically the only reason why I picked him too was because Greg Olsen is out and the Carolina Panthers love to use the tight end. And when Greg Olsen went out and he is out for the season, he had a pretty good day. He had caught 5 balls on 5 targets for 46 yards. So a pretty good, healthy tight end kind of production, as you probably would see out of Greg Olsen. And then on the season, he's just really hasn't done anything. And so it's sort of just been a popcorn kernel in the pot. You're just waiting for that person to turn on that flame and ready to pop. And I think Ian Thomas is popcorn ready right now, and he's going to pop soon.
I like it. And just to add on for that, his year-long totals and when he started earlier in the year, he wasn't great. His first stint in the first, but it was 3 out of the first 4 games. And Mike, you know, this rookie tight ends, I mean, transitioning is very difficult. And so I'm sure he was trying to figure out just how to play at NFL speeds, blocking and the guys he's responsible for blocking in the NFL. So I would take his struggles early on with a grain of salt. I mean, he's had 2.5 months of seasoning since then. So he should do better this time around. Like you pointed out last week, he was much better. Question for you. This is the last we've seen of Greg Olsen.
I think so. unless he's just into not being able to give it up, one of those players that can't call it a career, then yeah, I think he's done.
Yeah, I kind of think he was already past his expiration date. He was not great last year, and before he got hurt this year. The surgery that he had has an overwhelming occurrence of either re-injury or needing a second surgery. And I think, I don't know if I said it here, but I wrote it down a bunch of times this year about Greg Olsen, and I knew he was a ticking time bomb. And I mean, the guy is going to be, he's going to be 34 in 4 months. So it's like, you know, is he going to be like Antonio Gates, who doesn't know when to quit, you know, sort of to your point. Antonio Gates, who's the corpse, is now shuffling around in LA. So I agree with you. I don't think we're going to see Greg Olsen ever again, which sucks because he was, you know, solid tight end 5 or 6 there for a long time. So he will be missed in the fantasy community. Ian Thomas right at the top of my sleeper list for next year, given the offense.
Yeah.
And then just to stick it to you, Mark Andrews at Kansas City. There you go. How do you like that for a sleeper?
That's a good one. I like that.
Not even the top drafted rookie tight end on his own freaking team. But Mark Andrews, he plays for Baltimore. I would be very shocked if a lot of people knew that. Led the team in yards last week with 47, but he led the team in yards last week, and the Chiefs allowed 19.5 points to Jared Cook. And he can't do worse than Matt LaCoste did last week, which was my rookie sleeper last week, who had a big fat freaking goose egg. I just think Lamar Jackson's going to throw more than one touchdown for the first time in his career, because that's what you have to do against the Chiefs. And so hopefully that touchdown goes to Mark Andrews. So I feel very strongly about that, as you can tell. All right. So our sleepers, just to recap. Well, let's go with this caveat. Mike and I both had Josh Allen, Zay Jones, and Ian Thomas. He had Nyheim Hines at running back, but I audibled to Curtis Samuel and Mark Andrews for my my tight end, Curtis Samuel for my wide receiver. So those are our sleepers this week. You know, if they're not correct, again, as always, 100% money back guarantee from us. If you paid any money for this podcast, we'll go ahead and return it to you if we are incorrect.
See how nice we are?
Yeah, I know. Where else do you get a money back guarantee, huh? You also... If we're wrong, you also have a free invitation to not at me on Twitter. Do not message me. Do not fact check me. Do not tell me that I'm wrong. So, alrighty, we're going to transfer over to talking about the games this week. At home, first of all, weird. Second of all, you can go to, let's see, I did it off the top of my head last week. Was it NFL.com/NFL/lines? Yeah. That we're running with. Just behind the scenes, Mike texted me asking what the URL was. I was at the gym and I said, I think it's this. And that's what it was.
That was exactly what it was. actually, you were right both times, because you actually sent, with that text, you sent another one in case the one didn't work out. The first one didn't work out. And actually, both of them were right. So,
oh, they both redirect to the same place?
That yeah, rules. So you're like 200% on that one.
Yeah, buddy. For the price of one. So, all right, first game on that docket is going to be New York Jets travel to Buffalo, where Buffalo are 3.5-point favorites. It's not something that I thought I would say this year, but it has the worst over-under on the week. It's a 38-point over-under, which kind of feels right, because, I mean, this feels like it's going to be, what, like a 20-17 game?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I wouldn't mess with that over and under if you're out there gambling. That sounds about.
Yeah, I actually, when I said 20-17, I was like, actually, you know what? Probably 24-14, which is exactly on the over under. I was like, okay, never mind. So Mike, what are you looking for in this one other than Josh Allen and Zay Jones, which we already talked about?
Yeah, so basically, I want to know if the Bills' offense could go strong. They are averaging close to 400 yards total per game over the last three contests, which is ninth in the NFL, and they're just doing much better than their measly 250 through the first nine games, which was second to last. So they've gone from 250 yards average, total average, in their first nine games to close to 400. So I don't know if they're taking Popeye pills or what the heck they're doing, but there's a great, great improvement there. And one of the things about the Jets is they've had a tough time stopping the run, allowing over 200 yards per game in their last three contests. Yeah, that's just mind-boggling. So they're just an open sieve. They're just like, oh, go ahead and run. You know, if you want to take this lane, go ahead. We got multiple lanes for you to choose from. If you want to go through the A gap, that's personally right up for you. So to beat the Bills, the Jets will need to get their anemic running game going. They're last in the league in runs that gain 5 yards or more, and 30th in rate of runs that gain any yardage. So they're not even gaining like really any yardage when they're running the ball, as Dang. We can see with Kroll. We've been on him for the last 8 weeks, if not longer. And it won't get any easier. The Bills are first in the league when not giving up a yard on run. So Jets aren't running the ball. The Bills aren't giving up the run. And so I really don't think that any Jets are worth starting. And the only Bill that I would start, it would be LeSean McCoy. Josh Allen, as I said, in two quarterback leagues, and that kind of thing. Or if you're looking to flex something maybe, or stream, I should say, then Allen might be a play there. But for the most part, I would just only focus on LeSean McCoy.
All right. Would not focus on LeSean McCoy unless you stare really closely at him on your waiver wire. But that's just me.
Yeah, he's pretty bad. I RB2 flex option, but that's about it.
Yeah, he's you could do worse. If you just need some guaranteed points, you could play, but if you're expecting shady, I would look elsewhere. So, alrighty, next game up, it's my game. The Giants traveled to Washington, 3.5 point favorites, and this is the third worst game this week. I thought it was going to be second, but that's coming up. This is a 41-point over-under. I wonder why Eli Manning versus Mark Sanchez in 2018 is going to have a low over-under. Mike, do you know?
I don't even think I could have picked Mark Sanchez and Eli Manning ever battling it out ever again.
Yeah, he's the third string guy. It's like, come on. So Alex Smith, you know, 3 weeks ago, Colt McCoy broke his leg last week. So we're down to Mark Sanchez in Washington. And what I'm watching for in this game, because the entire offense is cuttable. AP probably will be good this week, but he had a 90-yard touchdown run last week. That's awesome, right, Mike?
Yeah, that was – I mean, whenever you can total nearly 100 yards, you're on to something.
Yeah, but outside of that 90-yard run, he had 8 yards on 8 carries.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So it's like that offense collapsing in the Mark Sanchez era. So what I'm watching for, and this will be after the game, what I'm watching for is – and I already saw it a little bit this weekend. All the people tying themselves in knots that Mark Sanchez is a better quarterback in 2018 than Colin Kaepernick. Okay. I saw so many people convincing themselves that Mark Sanchez was a better quarterback than, which I understand if you don't want Colin Kaepernick on your team because of the quote unquote distraction, but these people were insisting that Mark Sanchez was better. Like,
Wow, that's delusional.
When just from a pure statistical perspective, okay, Colin Kaepernick was, as a quarterback, better than Mark Sanchez both of their last 16 games, and he runs. So it's like, you know, maybe Colin Kaepernick's the 40th best quarterback in the world, okay? I'm not saying he's a starter, but Mark Sanchez is, what, 50th? Like, he's not good. Colin Kaepernick isn't great, but he's would be a high-end backup, and you know, this is a very winnable NFL, and they're going to lose it because they want to insist that Mark Sanchez, who was signed off the street 2 weeks ago, is a better option than Colin Kaepernick. They instead signed Josh Jackson, who was literally Colin Kaepernick's backup in 2014. So there's that. Yeah, that's my little soapbox. It's just, I got in a huge argument with the guy who insists that Mark Sanchez is far and away better than Colin Kaepernick.
You know, one stat that I use against these people that obviously don't know what they're talking about when they bring up those kind of situations, like Mark Sanchez is better than Colin Kaepernick. The one thing I always say to them is Colin Kaepernick is one of 10 quarterbacks in NFL history that has a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio.
Yes, he does not throw interceptions. And the moment that somebody says something about blah, 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 Kaepernick, I know at that moment, I know that they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
At that moment, there is a prominent fantasy football analyst, prominent, who I called out, acknowledge it, but I listen to his podcast every day. I don't anymore, but I listen to it every day, and he would mention, you know, this guy's going to have the inevitable Colin Kaepernick 4-interception game. I was like, dude, I called him out on Twitter. He never acknowledged it, but I never heard him say it again. I said, dude, look at Colin Kaepernick's game logs. He had one 4-interception game, and it was a huge meltdown. He had back-to-back pick sixes, and that's something like 20% of his career interceptions were in that game. So it's like, okay. But this is a fantasy football. Jordan Reed. I mean, I guess you can hang on to Jordan Reed, but this Washington offense is not one that I want any part of with Mark Sanchez under center. What I'm watching for is the inevitable meltdown. Next game, New Orleans at Tampa Bay, NFC South matchup. This one is going to be a fun one, a shootout. It's a 55-point over-under, the same 8.5 points. Other than watching fantasy point totals go up like, you know, those jackpot numbers on slot machines at casinos. Two wide receivers. Okay. You've got one guy who's been remarkably consistent over the last 5 days. The other remarkably inconsistent over the last 3 games. I'm talking about Adam Humphries for the Buccaneers. Check these stats out. Last 5 games. Average yards a game on 5 catches. Well, 5.2 catches per game. 5 touchdowns in 5 games. His 14.9 half PPR points. He's the number 8 wide receiver in half PPR. And he's still available in 30% of Yahoo leagues. I had to go double check to make sure I owned him in all my leagues when I was looking at those statistics. So I'm looking for Adam. Keep it rolling against a really primo Tampa Bay New Orleans matchup. They allow the most fantasy points to wide receivers. It's a little DFS action there. Flying under the radar. Other guy I'm looking for is on the other side of the ball. And one of two things will happen. Either Drew Brees will be looking for this guy, or I will be looking to see if this guy is actually on Tre'Quan Smith. He has 14 targets in his last 3 games. Okay. Do you know the distribution of those targets, Mike?
No, I don't.
0. Oh, 13 and 1. So I'm watching to see what's going on with this Tre'Quan Smith roller coaster. Granted, I'm probably not going to get on the roller coaster given how late it is in the season, but it is something I'd be interested in. Because if you have the balls, the cojones, to start a guy who got one or fewer targets in 2 out of his last 3 games, Wow. Hats off to you in the fantasy playoffs, because that is some. So that's what I'm looking for in New Orleans and Tampa Bay. And then also, I guess, on the Tampa Bay side, is this new Jameis for real? He's not quite the gunslinger that he's been this year, but he's also not, he's not scoring as many touchdowns, but he's all over as much. So I kind of want to see what's going on with Jameis as well.
That is so weird too, because as you're mentioning, it's, I mean, I don't know if they're just running him deep or what, but how do you go from, with Tre'Quan Smith catching 10 balls for 157 yards and a touchdown, to zero targets and two of those last three games, zero against Cincinnati, then he had the explosion against Philadelphia, and then nothing against Dallas.
Insane.
Yeah, it makes zero sense.
So, alrighty, yeah. So, next game up on the docket. This one's New England travels to Miami. 47-point over-under. New England are 7.5-point favorites. Should be a decent game. And by that, I mean a New England blowout probably. But New England traveling to Miami.
So, yeah, you know, I think for the most part, whenever New England plays Miami, they usually it ends up in a blowout. But for whatever reason, whenever New England travels to Miami, it becomes a different situation. They've lost four of the last five meetings, I should say, against Miami on the road, while Miami's been at home. So my question is, or what I'm looking for is, can the Patriots break through their matchup troubles with Miami on the road? And another thing too, on top of that, not only they're not playing Miami very well over the last few seasons, they're struggling to put points up on the board. So obviously, to beat Miami, you need to score points. However, New England is only putting up 22 points per game on the road, which is 18th in the NFL, compared to the 34 points they do at home. So I touch on this, I think, almost every week, and it's a home road terrible split for the Patriots, but I think they're going to have to climb two hills to beat Miami. The Dolphins have been tough at home and allowing points. They only allow 21 per game, which is 13th. So it matches exactly pretty much what Patriots put on the road, 22 points. They only allow 21. Another interesting fact about Miami's offense, outside of Drake outperforming Gore but getting less carries and scoring the only touchdowns on the ground, which you would think be Gore's territory, but the Dolphins also are the only team to score more touchdowns outside the red zone than inside it.
That's a good stat. Yeah.
I found that interesting, because you normally would think that if a team's scoring touchdowns, they're scoring while they're in the red zone. No, the Dolphins like to score while they're out of the red zone. And I would start Michelle, Brady, White, Edelman, Gronk, and then flex Gordon and Drake.
Yeah. That stat kind of explains why Frank Gore, or I don't know, maybe Frank Gore explains that stat, but why Frank Gore doesn't really have any touch.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good tell. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not really ripping off 21-yard runs anymore.
No. I think probably as long as it's probably like 12 or something to that effect.
Yeah. So, all right. He's older than dirt. Next game up, Baltimore at Kansas City. This one is a 10.5-point over-under. That is tied for number two on the week, with two other games, which we'll get to later. The Ravens are 6.5-point road underdogs. And Pat Mahomes is going to throw for 25 touchdowns in this game, I do believe. So what are you watching for in this one, other than what absurd tight windows Mahomes is going to try to throw the ball into this week?
Yeah. So definitely it's going to come down to what's going to be better, the great Chiefs offense or the tough defense of the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens is third against the run and it's second against the pass overall when it comes down to allowing points. Opponents have scored on only 29% of their possessions against the Ravens, that which is the lowest rate in the NFL. Jeez. So teams just are not scoring at all against this team. However, we know the Chiefs' ability to put up points on the scoreboard. They are first in the league in points per play with 16.2 point differential at home. They are definitely tough to outscore. So they basically what that means is they when the final score is revealed, the at home, the Kansas City Chiefs usually beat the team by 16 or more points. And they're playing in Kansas City. So it's going to be an interesting, say, yin and yang, where you have this great defense that doesn't allow any points against a team that always scores points, especially when they're at home. I think what's interesting about Kansas City on offense is their yards in rushing, where they are 13th and third in passing, also third in total offense. So I found that interesting because you would expect them to be, since their offense is so great, better than 13th on the run and third in passing yards, especially Mahomes. I mean, I really thought he'd be number one for sure without looking at the stats. I mean, third is, of course, not complainable, but it's less than what I really thought it was.
Yeah, it feels like Mahomes throws for like 400 yards every game. That's what it feels like. Let's see here. I'm looking at his numbers real quick. God, his lowest on the year is 249. That's absurd.
Yeah, this is crazy.
His worst game this year is 249 yards, 2 touchdowns.
That's insane.
Monster. Yeah, that's ridiculous. So,
you definitely want to start Mahomes. Go in with Kelsey, Gus Edwards, Hill, and then stream Lamar Jackson.
What about Mr.
Edwards?
Fat Kelvin, Bama Lamb, the newest Kansas City Chief, Kelvin Benjamin. Dude. Yeah.
Actually, when I was putting my notes together, I completely forgot about it. He wasn't on the team at the time, but yeah, I don't think it matters what team he's on for the time being, because he's probably not going to get much of anything.
So, okay. I'm going to give you 3 options, and I want you to let me know so Kelvin Benjamin on the Chiefs. Did they get him as a big red zone target, like a second tight end? Did they get him as Sammy Watkins insurance because he's, you know, he's banged up and he's not going to play this weekend, and it's sort of like a, hey, we need a decent body that's not coming off the street? Or did they get him because they're tired of Andy Reid winning all the, and they needed somebody who might challenge him for that spot? So why do you think they got Kelvin Benjamin?
You know, I don't know. I was actually really surprised that they would. You know, when teams are as good, especially offensively, as the Chiefs are, and like the Saints too, why go out and get whatchamacallit? When, you know, and it's really, they never even use them. It's the same thing here with Chiefs. It doesn't make any sense why you want to throw a monkey in the wrench and try to disrupt everything, especially with Kelvin Benjamin's attitude. But I don't know. Maybe they just want to get a tall receiver, like you said, for someone for the red zone area, where, you know, Travis Kelce is the biggest guy you have. So Benjamin's has a little bit more athletic ability, being a wide receiver, and maybe for someone for intermediate. Short to intermediate passes, because that's about as good as Benjamin can run. So I don't know. I definitely specialize areas, but not a full game, of course.
Like a real big boy, like somebody to block. I mean, maybe, but his effort sucks. I mean, he's just, at this point, his talent is just being a real big boy. And, you know, he went from Cam Newton, who he complained about, to Josh Allen, Nathan Peterman, and Matt Barkley, and there's somebody else I'm forgetting.
Yeah, they had a list of quarterbacks.
Derek Anderson?
Derek Anderson. Yes, nice.
Really? Okay. Yep. Wow. I didn't believe it while it was coming out of my mouth. And now he's going to who might be, you know, top 5, well, top 3 passing talent, you know, in the NFL. Maybe not the complete game, but nobody's hotter than Pat Mahomes right now. So if he can't produce with Pat Mahomes, maybe it wasn't Cam Newton's fault.
Yeah. Or all the other quarterback's fault. And you know, I'm wondering if he's going to actually refuse to run routes with Patrick Mahomes.
Alrighty. That would be very funny. I'm wondering, actually, what I was just thinking of, I was wondering if he's ever heard Patrick Mahomes talk, who talks about, he talks like Kermit the Frog. So I wonder if he never heard him talk until practice today, and he was like, what the heck?
What did I get myself into this time?
So next game up is going to be Indianapolis at Houston, game near and dear to your heart.
50 yeah.
Point over under. Colts are 4.5 point underdogs.
Yeah, and they should be too. Maybe even more after last week's performance and playing in Houston. So basically, the Colts, can their offense bounce back after just eating a donut last week? That's going to be something they're going to have to. If they can get score quickly, I think they'll get rhythm going. But if they turn out to be like the Jaguars on Thursday night, where they're slow to start and they continue to falter, then it's going to be a pretty bad game for Indianapolis. So obviously it's not going to be easy to score against the Texans. They just allow 28% of teams' possessions to score since week 4. So that's one of the reasons why they're winning a lot of their games and won such so many consecutive games, is because no teams are putting up points on the board. And since then, teams have had a total of 107 possessions, and they have allowed just 18 touchdowns. That's 17% of scores that they allow teams to drive down and put it in the end zone, which is the lowest rate in the league. Texans are also allow the fewest red zone plays, 6 per game. So, yeah.
Dang, that's troubling for the Colts. Because, I mean, other than T.Y. Hilton, maybe Marlon Mack, they don't really have that breakaway big play guy.
Yeah, exactly. They even T.Y. Hilton is not so much the deep ball threat as he used to be. He'll run maybe one or two where they'll try to get him the ball down the field. But for the most part, yeah, I think he's slowing down a little bit. So they're using him more for intermediate to middle type wide receiver on their throws. A lot of his catches are short throws for sure. For the Colts, obviously it all runs through Andrew Luck, and he will have to break through that Houston defense that, you know, obviously hasn't allowed a quarterback to throw more than 2 touchdowns since they faced Luck in week 4. So prior to them facing Andrew Luck in week 4, they have not allowed a quarterback to throw for more than 2 touchdowns. Teams have been more successful in passing yards. Texans give up 290 yards through the air in their last 3 of their last 4 games against quarterbacks. So I can see the Colts, it's sort of that bend break defense where they allow the yards to happen, but when it comes down to shutting it down, they shut it down. I would start Luck, even though it's going to be a tough game. Lamar Miller, Ebron, Hilton, Watson, and of course Hopkins. And then I would flex out Demaryius Thomas and Marlon Mack.
And it sounded like if you're in a pinch, Nyheim Hines.
Yeah, exactly. If you're looking for some PPR points, yeah, definitely Hines.
Man, your assessment of this game, though, has me worried about owning any Colts. It's looking kind of bleak, especially because their offense has been marching, getting down to the red zone, and then it feels like most of their scores come within the 5 or the 10. So that's a bit concerning to me, but we'll see how it goes. Like you said, bend but don't break leads to a lot of yardage, so maybe that'll offset the low touchdown total from them.
I think too, a lot of things with Houston per se is that if you look at their schedule, they're not really playing teams that are dominant offensively. I think the last time they actually played a dominant offensive team is the Colts. So it's sort of been a mirage effect for the Texans. And if they can go in and do what the Jaguars did to the Colts, or the resemble something to that effect, then I think the Texans have a really good team. But I think the Colts are a team that could actually expose that hole. We're better than everybody else because we won whatever it is, 9 games in a row or whatever that is at this point.
Yeah, they've got that winning more than half the season in a row gives you a little bit of swag, an earned swagger. So yeah. All right, next game up is, you know, the just a classic rivalry. Just, you know, you close your eyes, you think of all the great rivalries in sports, and primary among those is the Panthers in Cleveland. this is a game that I literally cannot remember a time that Carolina and Cleveland have played, but the Panthers are 2-point favorites, 47-point over under. Kind of surprised at there being a line for this one, given that they weren't certain about Cam Newton's shoulder. That seemed like the sort of thing that they might pull the line off, like they did when they weren't sure about Joe Flacco's hip a few weeks ago before Lamar Jackson made his first start. So Cleveland's coming off of a bad game last week, but I love Baker Mayfield. I think the offense is going to be humming. But what are you looking for in this one, in Carolina traveling to Cleveland?
So, what I want to see is can a Panther player, not named McCaffrey or Newton, take advantage of the Browns' sieve of a defense? You know that McCaffrey's going to do it. You know Newton's going to do it. But like you mentioned, and this is one of the reasons why it sort of sparked memory, Curtis Samuel, why I almost wrote him down myself, was going through this game. And I think maybe Samuel can be that player. So at this point, the Browns rank 28th versus the rush and 29th versus the pass. And 29th in non-fantasy points allowed on the ground. So basically anything in the air is free game against the Browns. Carolina has struggled on the road. Their point differential on the road is -8 points. So that's going to be a little tough going into the Dogtown compared to the positive 7.7 points at home, which is the largest gap in the NFL. So you're looking at, when they're on the road, they don't really score many points, and that's why their differential is -8. But when they're at home, they really put it on. Unfortunately, they're on the road. This translates into their lack of scoring, obviously, on the road. Only 20 points per game, which is 29th in the NFL. For the Browns, I'd like to see the progressions of Mayfield, Chubb, and Callaway. I want to see those three guys. Callaway was another guy I thought of putting down. Can Njoku show some consistency, finally become a tight end one that he's capable of? And Njoku has been really interesting. If you look, go down his stat line, it's just very inconsistent. It's all over the place. And the guy is just way too good to be as inconsistent as he is. So I would start McCaffrey, Mayfield, Newton, and Chubb. Flex Landry and Njoku. And as I said, the guy that I think has a really good shot is Curtis Samuel, but also DJ Moore might be someone also interested in putting in there, because I really feel that there's going to be one of those Carolina Panthers. It's either going to be Samuel or Moore that's going to really have a good day against Cleveland.
Yeah, I think so too. And while you were talking, I got curious. I looked it up. Since 1999, this is going to be their sixth game against each other. So they play only every 4 years or so, because they never, because they're in opposite conferences. So it makes sense. But it's funny because December 21st, 2014, was the last time that they played. And so the Panthers were still in it, and the Browns, I'm sure, were 1-13 at that point, or 1-14. So they were actually, that was the year that with Mike Pettine, when they were actually relevant. So they were 7-8 after that game. So I was wrong. They were somewhat, and the Panthers were 6-8-1. So they both sucked, is what it was. They were both out of the playoffs. So either way, it's one of those classic NFL matchups that you think of. All right, next one up. A game that actually kind of feels like it's if you went back, go back to August, and I said, Second week of the playoffs, Atlanta travels to Green Bay. You'd be like, hey, that seems like that would be a pretty good game. You know, Atlanta probably was like 11-5, Green Bay maybe 10-6. You know, maybe one of them ended up 12-4, you know, caught a hot streak. No, neither season has gone very well for the Falcons or the Packers. And the Packers are actually coming off of firing their head coach last week. So Mike McCarthy was fired last week. I'm sure you have some Mike solidarity there with him. but I mean, he had an astounding record that any team would love for their head coach to have, any fan base, but he sort of struggled lately. The play calling hasn't been great. The personnel usage has been abysmal. I mean, Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones went almost back to a 50-50 split last week. After Aaron Jones had been amazing. So that's been a little questionable, and it's looking more and more like Steve Sarkisian is getting close to calling his last game in Atlanta as well, because that offense has been a mess. But kind of what I'm looking for in this one is with Green Bay is, what does the Green Bay offense look like with Joe Philbin? My guess, and this is sort of the easy logical thing, is he just lets Aaron Rodgers do his thing. And just sort of rolls the ball out there and lets Aaron Rodgers call the plays and do everything. And in that case, you know, does that lift the Green Bay offense? Which it might, you know, letting Aaron Rodgers do his thing. But at the same time, Aaron Rodgers has not been great this year, independent of play calling. He's missing open passes. He's not as mobile. I mean, he hurt his knee week one. I think I said it last week, where I wouldn't be surprised if he's been hurt all year and hasn't said anything to anybody, and get some sort of off-season knee scope to clean up what's going on in there. So what I'm looking for is, can you trust Aaron Rodgers? Is MVS bouncing back? Is it Equanimeous St. Brown? Is it none of the above? Is it just going to be Davante Adams and Aaron Jones? And then Jimmy Graham got in on the action last week. But what does it look like against Atlanta? And then for Atlanta, I'm starting to think, because Tevin Coleman has been next level, just disappointing this year. One of the reasons he was drafted as high as he was like, hey, if Devonta Freeman goes down, Tevin Coleman is going to be great. It's going to be a top 15 back every week. But I mean, he's posted 28 fantasy points over the last two, or 28 yards over the last 2 weeks. I'm sorry, 20 over the last 2 weeks. He hasn't cracked 100 since week 9. Yeah. Which is also his only game this year with multiple touchdowns. So he's been bad. So what I'm looking for, what I think might happen, is they might start looking at the guy they drafted to be his replacement next year. That's Ito Smith. Ito Smith, he had in week 6 and 9, he had double digit carries, but he's been sort of this low carry volume. But I mean, they got to start figuring out what they have for next year. I think they have to know at this point that they're not making the playoffs, and they have to decide if Ito Smith is their future, if they got to figure somebody else out to go with Devonta Freeman. So that's what I'm looking for this weekend. I mean, Calvin Ridley has been disappointing. Mosa Nu's been disappointing. Julio Jones has been all right, except he kind of fell off last week after scoring touchdowns in 3 straight. You know, he had 18 yards last week after, you know, 4 straight big games, 5 straight big games. So, I mean, there's not much to look at in Atlanta. That's what I'm getting at there is Julio's Julio. Everybody else is disappointing. Matt Ryan, you're going to start. Tevin Coleman, you're going to hopefully not start, but the guy you're going to be looking at is Ito Smith there.
I like that. I think that they're going to really need to make a decision. Right now, I guess at the end of the year, both Telvin and Devontae are free agents, and I think they mentioned that they're only going to keep one. Do you think, by the sound of it, I think you're saying that probably Freeman is going to be the guy that they keep?
I think Freeman's still under contract. I think what it is he has a cap hit if they cut him, but I think he's still under contract. Let me double check that before I pop off, because I know he has a big cap hit, but I think if they yeah, he's just got a, they can save, let's see. Oh, next year it's $9 million dead on the cap. So they're probably not going to cut him. It's after next season that is his cap hit kind of starts to drop, because it's $9 million next year if they cut him. So I don't think they're going to cut him this offseason, but maybe they're seeing, maybe they get do, they need to see if they need to do what they did with Tevin Coleman to Devonta Freeman, if that makes sense. Because they got Ito Smith to replace Tevin Coleman. Do they need to draft a guy to replace Devonta Freeman after next year? Just let him start to fall by the wayside. Because after next year, they have the potential out where they, that's the first time that they'll actually will have cap savings if they cut him instead of paying a cap penalty. If that makes sense. Because because if they cut him, they'll pay an extra $2.25 million next year. Or against the cap, if they cut him in 2020, it's they'll save $3.5 million. So that might be what they're going for. But I just think they need to look at what they have with Ito Smith and figure it out.
For sure. Because either the guy has the goods or he doesn't. But yeah, you definitely have to kick the tires.
Give him a shot. So next game up is one I will be at, because I unfortunately have 49ers season tickets and I just re-upped the other day. For next season, and that is Denver Broncos traveling to San Francisco, well, traveling to Santa Clara to take on the San Francisco 49ers. This one is a 45.5 point over under, and the Broncos are 4-point favorites. What I'm looking for the Broncos, Demaryius Thomas is gone. Emmanuel Sanders tore his Achilles this week, which means it's the Courtland Sutton era is upon us. I really liked Courtland Sutton coming out of the draft. He was, I think, my number three wide receiver. I called him top three by talent. This was not in the cards. This was not what they planned to happen. They did not count on, when they drafted him, they counted on having him be seasoned a year, but then they didn't count on, you know, being out of it midway through the season, cutting Demaryius Thomas, and then starting to claw their way back in, and then losing Emmanuel Sanders and being forced into position to start to play Courtland Sutton. He kind of didn't have great games since Demaryius Thomas was traded, but last week he popped off for 85 yards and a touchdown on 7 targets. So I'm kind of looking to see what Courtland, wide receiver one. Also, Deshaun Hamilton out of the slot. The Niners are trash against the slot. They cannot guard slot wide receivers. Reason being is they play this cover three look that usually, if you just give your quarterback 3 seconds of protection, the guy coming out of slot will end up with a linebacker on him. He'll run right past him. Just watch what Tyler Lockett did last week to Malcolm Smith. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about. 49ers run a scheme that does not match the talent level of their personnel, and that's why they get burnt for these big long plays. They need the Legion of Boom era Seattle Seahawks for it to work. That's my 2 cents. I don't like their defensive coordinator. I think Robert Saleh needs to go. I think John Lynch also needs to go, because he's putting bad players on a defense that needs really good players. Speaking of really good players, Nick Mullins. Sorry. Nick Mullins threw for over 400 yards last week against a very good Seattle Seahawks defense. They're not quite the Legion of Boom, but they also aren't the kind of team that gives up 404 yards. Most of that was in garbage time. Just trying to see, you know, what Nick Mullins can do. Also want to see what Dante Pettis can do now that Marquise Goodwin is trending to be back. I mean, he wasn't hurt. He was out for personal reasons, and he's back at practice, so he should play this weekend. But Pierre Garçon remains out. So that's kind of what I'm looking for at Denver, at San Francisco, other than looking for the exit to try to get out of there as soon as possible to beat the traffic. That's really what I'm looking for. I'm going to be square with you. I do not feel like getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning on Sunday to go to this poop fest that it's going to be. But parking lot's fun, so I will be happy with that.
Next. Yeah. You know, without Emmanuel Sanders and Marius, and, you know, maybe it'll be closer than.
But they still have Von Miller and Philip Lindsay and Bradley Chubb and, you know, a lot better players than the 49ers have.
So, That's true.
Yeah. So next one up, Cincinnati at the Los Angeles Chargers. This one has a shockingly low over under for, I think, what the Chargers will do, but it's a 47.5 point over under. And this game is projected to be the biggest blowout of the week. 14-point favorites are the LA Chargers. I think I might have a guess, but what are you looking for in this one?
What I want to see is how that San Diego Chargers offense continues to look like without Melvin Gordon. We got a little glimpse
that's what I thought.
Jackson really came down strong. Is Jackson going to get the ball more often? I think so. And I think Eckler is going to be even more reserved to his gadget role, third down kind of situation. So the volume should be another low week for Rivers after a nice output versus Pittsburgh, mostly just because the Bengals can't outscore other teams. And with their poor defense, it's just a bad combination. So not only are they giving up points, but the Bengals also struggled to score points, especially now with Andy Dalton out and Jeff Driskel in, which is probably not that much of a drop off, but it's still significant. The Bengals have led in only 20% of their offensive plays, which is just above only the Arizona Cardinals. So if you think about how bad the Cardinals offense is, the Bengals are just a little bit right above that.
Oh, come on. Jeff Driskel is really good.
He's going to move that offense. since their bye week in week 9, this will kill you, Jeff. The Bengals have led only on 7 of their 229 offensive snaps. That's right. They've only led on 7 of their 229 offensive snaps since week 9.
Good God. That's a statistic right there.
Yeah.
My goodness.
That's just crazy.
I'm writing that down.
The Bengals defense also have trouble stopping the run. They're giving up 200 plus yards per game on the ground. However, Rivers has thrown for 2 touchdowns every game this season and joining only 3 other players in history of football: Aaron Rodgers in 2011, Peyton Manning in 2004, and Johnny Unitas in 1959. So you got 2 Colts in there, baby. Yeah. You probably know by looking at my profile pic that I'm a huge Johnny Unitas fan. So, who I would start this week, of course, Rivers and Allen. I'd flex Tyler Boyd, the Chargers running backs, and Joe Mixon.
All right. Good rundown of that one. Next game up is NFC East battle for the first place in the division. Philadelphia at Dallas, a game that if the Rams weren't playing the Bears would have gotten flexed in a Thursday or Sunday night football, because we live in a hellscape where we're all destined to watch primetime NFC East games for all eternity. This one is a 44-point over-under. The Eagles are road dogs in this one, which if you told me that before the season started, I would think that Carson Wentz still wasn't playing. I would be a little bit shocked. And that's what I'm looking for in this game. Carson Wentz has 89% ownership in Yahoo. He has 3 touchdowns in his last 3 games, and it wasn't like he was playing, the Ravens or anything. He played New Orleans, which is a good matchup. He played the Giants, which is a pretty good matchup. I mean, they're not stifling. And he played Washington, which is a more difficult matchup, but one you should still get, some decent fantasy points with. That comes after 6 straight games of at least 2 touchdowns, and he hasn't done anything for 3 weeks. And it's one of those, poop or get off the pot sort of flex points in the year. You have to honestly look at yourself, look at the other quarterbacks on your team, and ask yourself if you're going to start Carson Wentz in the next 2 weeks after this one, if he plays poorly in this game. If he plays poorly in this game, I mean, that could be lights out for him on the season, which kind of makes sense, because there was a report that came out, I believe it was Schefter or Rappaport, one of those two guys, that said that he's still not fully healed from his knee injury. So that explains why he's been bad this year. And it's not like matchups down the stretch. He's got the Rams next week. He's got the Texans in fantasy championship. So if he plays bad in this game, I mean, I expect that 89% to drop down a lot. And there might not be any reason to hang on to Carson Wentz after this one. And that's really what I'm watching for, because he's dragged the whole offense down with him. Alshon's done poorly. Golden Tate hasn't done great, though he did score a touchdown last week. They started to win when they started to run more with Josh Adams. So he's sort of taken over for Carson Wentz.
Yeah, I don't know if I fully on board with that whole over the knee injury, because he sure moves around that pocket and can take off and run quite easily. So my opinion, well, for whatever it's worth, I think that they're really missing that pounding running game that they had last year. And without that, they really just have a hodgepodge of running backs for certain occasions. And just no one to really take that first and second down and beat the defense down with it over the rest of the game. So that's just my opinion anyways.
No, that's a valid assessment, especially the not believing the knee thing. I think it might be an excuse.
Yeah, exactly.
Next game, I'm going to be real quick with this game. Detroit at Arizona. 40.5 point over under. Detroit's 3-point favorites. There is nothing to look at in this game. Nothing. Kerryon Johnson's hurt, so it's going to be LeGarrette Blount. Christian Kirk's on IR, so it's going to be Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson. Like, okay. Josh Rosen, you're not starting at any point this season. Matt Stafford, you should be done with him. Kenny Galladay's Kenny Galladay. Bruce Ellington's a sneaky PPR play, but there's not much to look for in this game. So no. in the immortal words of Ariana Grande, thank you. Next.
And you're pretty much right about that. I mean, you would last year, if David Johnson was healthy, this would have been one of those games that would have a lot of substance and meat to it. This year, yeah, there's nothing but marrow and bone.
Oh yeah, if you could mix and match some teams from the last few years, you could get to a point where Detroit at Arizona is a good matchup. This just isn't one of those years or point in time in the year. And I really think that trading Golden Tate ruined their season. It just everything died after that. Yep. for Detroit. So
it totally went downhill right after that trade. So either that's complete utter coincidence, or it has everything to do with Golden Tate. And I'm not so big on coincidences when it comes to all the preparation that they do for these teams in the NFL.
Yeah, I just don't understand. I can't think of a reason why they did it, unless there's something that'll come out that he was, punching Matt Stafford in the face before every game or something crazy like that. Cause he did get in that fight with, Percy Harvin on the Seahawks. So maybe that's what he was doing. Or maybe he was up to whatever he was up to with, Russell Wilson, on the Seahawks. And I'll leave that to you folks to Google. Figure out what that was. Next game up, Pittsburgh travels to Oakland. Oh God. 51.5 point over under. Pittsburgh are 10-point favorites, and I have a feeling that they will be up 10 points at halftime and will more than cover this. It's gonna be one of those like 38-14 games, I think, which hey, puts that right at the over under. So what are you looking for in this one? And I think I might know because we already talked about it earlier.
So I kind of borrowed the line from last week's Chiefs and Raiders game, and I'm carrying it over to this week, and that is how many different receivers will Ben Roethlisberger throw four touchdowns? And it's like you said, this is going to be a brutal game. I'm almost put a poll out on Twitter to see when people thought the game would actually be over by, or garbage time would start either quarter one, two, three, or four. So I don't know. I think a lot of people would probably mark quarter two as garbage time, but we'll see.
Wait, hold on. How do you define garbage time?
Well, and I don't know if there's actual definition for this, but what we do when we're dissecting PFF games is garbage time is 10 points or more with 4 minutes left to go in the game. Or I think it's like 20 points more, 20 points differential with 10 minutes left to go in the game, or 25 or something to that effect with 10 minutes to go in the game.
Okay. So it's, I didn't know that. That's actually very interesting that PFF has a definite moment where they call it garbage time. It's funny to put a qualitative measure on something that's so ephemeral. I was going to say, garbage time starts at the coin flip. so, I mean, I can see a world where five different receivers get passing touchdowns. I could see, you know, any of these five guys, you can close your eyes and see receiving touchdowns for. A.B., Smith-Schuster, James Washington, Vance McDonald, Jesse James, Jalen Samuel, Stephen Ridley. Like, you can just close your eyes and you can see five of those guys scoring, having receiving touchdowns without any sort of effort being made much by Ben Roethlisberger, because the Raiders, they are bad.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is like, as you're rattling off these names, almost to like any other team, you could say, I think that's a little too many names. But when you're looking at the Raiders, you're just, yeah, I can actually believe that. I can see Roethlisberger throwing to five, six different receivers for touchdowns. It makes much sense to me. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that Steelers are first in the NFL in passing differential than their opponent. Nearly 100 yards more than their opposition. And then it comes down to Oakland. They allow a TD once every 12 passing attempts. So if Roethlisberger throws 36 times, he's going to get three touchdowns. And you know, that's probably cake right there. So that's three. And then probably one or two in there where it doesn't really match average. So I'm really thinking that the Steelers are going to throw for five touchdowns to five different players. The highest rate in the league, obviously. They also have faced the most red zone plays per game, an average of 11 red zone plays. Teams score on 51% of their possessions versus the Raiders. And the highest rate in the NFL, and they have allowed 29 passing touchdowns, which is also a league high. So you have a team, you know, basically this all falls down to the average of passing touchdowns against the Raiders. So once every 12 passing attempts really just leads to all this other stuff that I'm saying. And then you got the offensive line of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they are pass protectors. Then you have the Oakland Raiders on that side, and they can't get to the quarterback. They are the worst in getting to the quarterback, while Pittsburgh is the best at protecting them. So there you go again with the passing options and really Ben Roethlisberger exploiting that whole situation. So you're obviously going to start Ben Roethlisberger. The only one that I probably would say that you don't want to start him against, if you have an option, is Patrick Mahomes. But even then, you still might really want to think about it. And then, of course, AB, Juju. I mean, just start all the Steelers. And then flex Jared Cook if you really want to. If you got to have a Raider in your lineup and you're desperate and you have nowhere else to turn, Cook could be, like, really your only guy that you might want to think about.
Yeah. So you don't believe in the C.J. Anderson? The C.J. Anderson, Doug? You know, great 1-2 punch to have in your 2015 fantasy leagues. Yeah. Man, Jordy, CJ Anderson.
Good Lord.
And that was when Derek Carr was good. was back in, was it 2000? It was either 15 or 16 when he broke his leg and he was good. So this is a heck of a 2015 fantasy team that John Gruden's putting together there in Oakland.
Yeah, he, you know, the only problem is he's 3 years too late, but hey, he's on it.
Hey, you know what? I honestly don't know how he can do so poorly because of all the tape and all the games that he clearly watched for Monday Night Football. Like, how can he have such a bad grasp on player evaluation? Or, you know, he's, everything seems to be so out of date for him. It doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, I think he has a permanent quizzical look on his face, like on a daily basis. Like, I don't know what to do with this.
Well, yeah, you're always quizzical if you don't know what you're doing.
Exactly.
Which explains why I'm so quizzical on the show. All right, Rams at Bears. 51.5 point over under. Rams are 3-point favorites. This game is going to be really good, I think. You've got the great Bear. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know if I said it. Rams 3-point favorites. You got the Bears, super strong defense. You got the Rams, super great offense. Pretty good Bears offense, pretty good Rams defense. So this is going to be one of those things where it's every, you know, they're pretty evenly matched on both sides of the ball. And I don't know if you could tell the way my voice picked up. This is going to be a fun game, I think. I think this is going to be a fun, interesting game. Whenever the stars come out, those are great games. You know, you've got Khalil Mack, Jared Goff, Todd Gurley. Maybe Mitchell Trubisky's hitting that level. He should be back for this game. Tariq Cohen's definitely emerged on the scene this year. You know, Allen Robinson, Brandon Cooks. This is one of those games where it's just like, fire all your cannons, as Evan Silva says. If you got a player in this game, I would start it personally. That's what I would say, because I think this is going to be a good, fun game. It's going to be a lot of back and forth, I think. And I think it's going to be, sadly, the second best Rams game on primetime recently, because that Rams-Chiefs game might be one of the best games ever. I'm still thinking about it. It was three weeks ago. I'm still thinking about that game. But what I'm looking for in this one is Josh Reynolds. So he's the third wide receiver now for the Rams. Now that Cooper Kupp has he was hurt. He was out for a game or two. And he got hurt again, and now he's out for the year. What I'm looking for with Josh Reynolds is, so he's had two games. He had one really good game in that really bonkers Chiefs Rams game. He went for 6 catches on 8 targets for 80 yards and touchdown. Great game. Then last week was kind of an unusual Rams game. They played against Detroit. It was a close game. I was watching this one. It was like 16-13 for way too late. And then they scored 2 late touchdowns and kind of pulled away. This was the game. I don't know if everybody remembers. This is a great play where Todd Gurley decided to run horizontal to the end zone to stop the clock, to, you know, keep the clock running, even though there was like 3 minutes left in the game. It wasn't one of those things that really mattered that much. But that was sort of an unusual Rams game. They ended up with 30 points, but it wasn't one of those dominating Rams efforts that you usually see where they quick strike out to 32 points, 35 points, and then sort of coast the rest of the game and just run the ball. So in that game, he had 2 catches on 5 targets for 19 yards. So now you have one really good game. Well, that was a high scoring game. You have one really bad game, but that was a low scoring game. This one should be somewhere in the middle. So this is kind of where you can see what Josh Reynolds is going to be like in the last few weeks of the season. Like, is he going to be low target volume, 4 or 5 targets, probably not worth looking at? Or is he going to be take over for Cooper Kupp, get a lot of red zone targets like Coop got? So what I'm looking for in this one, because everybody is what they are at this point in the season, except for Josh Reynolds in this game. So I want to see that. And I want to see, I guess, you know, Mitchell Trubisky back. Is he back? Because he was on a torrid pace before he got hurt. So that's what I'm looking for in Rams at Bears on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah. And, you know, I've seen it before where these players like Mitchell Trubisky, who had a, you know, not so much his fault freshman season where it was pretty limited and they really constrained him, put him in a tight jacket, really. And then he sort of got slowly used to it and this year, and then really, as you mentioned, really expounded on the scene. And how much is that going to mess with him that, you know, he's missed some time? And I've seen it, and I'm sure you've seen it, where in all sports, where a player is doing well and then something happens and they miss a few moments, games, whatever, and they're never the same again. So yeah, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. And there's kind of the parallels that everybody drew before the season to Troops in his rookie year and Goff in his rookie year. And then the movement from Jeff Fisher to McVay, and then the same movement from Fox to Nagy. And so you have kind of that parallel thing, and it kind of worked out for the Bears this year, not quite the Rams of last year, but so you do also have that sort of storyline, that parallel development line, which honestly sounded kind of lazy before the year. I was like, come on guys. I mean, that's not really evaluating the players and the coaches and all that stuff. It's just a old guy replaces new guy with young quarterback, or new guy replaces old guy with young quarterback. So kind of silly, but it ended up working out.
Yeah. Yeah. So far. And I guess interesting too. I just thought of that. You have this game in the NFC, and then on the AFC side, you have Baltimore, Kansas City. So you kind of have a morning afternoon game that you can probably tune into to see the two yin and yang type of styles of games. So that should be fun too.
Yeah. A strength, two strength on strength games. Cause the shootout games, where it's like a great offense, bad defense against great offense, bad defense, it kind of is like when you play Madden on easy, you're like, all right, yeah, so I scored again. All right. So I scored again. And it gets kind of boring after a while. Cause it's, not that exciting to just, you know, watch 4 20-yard chunks and you have a touchdown. Like, yeah, that's not that exciting. But the strength on strength, where you get the turnovers and the excitement and all that stuff, those games are fun. So yeah, I think these yin and yang styles and strength on strength games should be fun. And then last game on the docket, Minnesota at Seattle. This is a 45.5 point over under. Minnesota are road favorites by 3 points. This game is kind of a loser goes home game for the playoffs. They're both in the hunt. Seattle's not winning in the division. Minnesota probably isn't winning the division, and they're both in the hunt for a wild card seed. So this one kind of feels like a winner go home situation this week. What I'm looking for is, it looks like Dalvin Cook is back. His running hasn't been great, but it's been his receiving chops that have been going, pretty strong over the last couple weeks. Last week he did have a strong running game, but the week before just 10 for 29, but he's gotten, he had 8 catches for 22 yards last week, which is great in your PPR and half PPR leagues. Week before, 3 catches, 47 yards and a touchdown. So he's had that sort of like balanced attack where, he's getting you like 70, 80 yards. Last week he topped 100, but a good chance at a score. So we kind of pegged Dalvin Cook when the season began, at least the fantasy football community at large, is a guy sort of in the running back 12 to 15 range that had a chance to end in the top 10. Injuries and ineffectiveness from the injuries kind of sapped him of that. But I want to see if Dalvin Cook is back, because this is a strong Seattle defense that, granted, they got chewed up by Nick Mullins and Jeff Wilson last week, which is a heck of a 1-2 punch. But I kind of think that was an anomaly, because I mean, that Niners Seahawks game was never close. So I think they kind of just, they knew that they could just wait for the 49ers to screw up. I mean, Bobby Wagner had a 98-yard pick six. So they just waited for the Niners to screw up. They won't have that luxury this week. They kind of have to attack it more. The defense might be stronger. The numbers won't be quite as crazy from the Vikings. But I kind of want to see what Dalvin Cook does this week, because it's a valid conversation right now. If you go like Dalvin Cook or Austin Eckler, Dalvin Cook, or at least for this week, you know, Dalvin Cook or Jeff Wilson, like I mentioned, or Dalvin Cook or like a Jalen Samuels, maybe I would go Dalvin Cook in all those situations, but it's an actual conversation that needs to be had, at least with yourself, about whether you should start or sit Dalvin Cook in those situations. So a third good mat, good play against a bad matchup, I think you can slot them in for the rest of your playoffs and your running back two or flex spot and feel good about it. So that's kind of what I'm looking for this week against the Seahawks. And I tried as I might, I could not find something to look for against the Seahawks. DJ Moore, maybe Rashad Penny. I don't know. That offense is really weird. Russell Wilson had 4 touchdowns on 17 pass attempts last week. So
what do you think of Wilson for the 49ers, the running back that came on last week?
Jeff Wilson he's not very big, but he's kind of speedy, but he's not like, he doesn't seem very elusive. He, to me, feels like the quintessential, like, fifth running back on a team. Just like a guy, like he's 6 foot 194. He's not big. He's not small. He's not fast. He's slow. He's not powerful, but he's not weak. He's just kind of a guy. He's, you know, like I said, like the perfect, like fourth, fifth running back on a team. He's the type of guy who his spot on a roster depends on either injury or special teams play. I'm trying to think of an analog, but honestly, I don't know that many fourth running backs on a team. Well, yeah. nothing about him stands out too much to me. He's got good hands. He's caught 8 of his 9 passes last week. But you know, he's just a guy. He was on the practice squad on a very bad 49ers team until 2 weeks ago. Who's ultimate Jags and Alfred Morris and Raheem Mostert until now. So there's not much to think of him. He's a big beneficiary of how good Shanahan is at scheming an offense.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, that will do it for this week. It has been a long regular season. Mike and I decided this is going to be our last looking ahead at the week game. Right, Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah, because at this point, there's not a lot of questions left to be answered, you know, in week 15 of 16. There's not much actionable there, you know, answering a question for the last two games of the season. So what our plan is going forward, we're still going to come to you weekly. Next week, we are going to do our 2018 awards, talk about MVPs, LVPs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That should be fun. In week 16, we'll go ahead and take a look ahead at the 2019 fantasy season. Just do what I like to call a way too early, because it is way too early. Way too early look at that. And then we'll talk playoffs through the playoffs, and then we're going to play it by ear from there. So there'll be a lot less fantasy talk come playoff time, but we'll still be around. So I kind of like this transition. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think, talk about something a little different. Mike, I'm sure you agree.
Yeah.
Flexing some different muscles. But thanks, everybody, for listening. If you made it this far, keep telling myself I'm going to do this at the top, but I keep forgetting to do it. Please, Apple Music or wherever you're getting your podcasts, rate, review us. Would greatly appreciate it. Subscriptions, because this was our first season of the podcast. We're trying to get some stuff going for next year. So we'd greatly appreciate it. You can go to the website, footballabsurdity.com. We have weekly start sits. We have waiver wire. We have sleepers, a lot of good stuff coming from the website. You can follow us on Twitter at FBallAbsurdity. I'm JM Crisco. That's KRISKO. Mike is RFL Red Zone. That is RFL Red Zone. I figured I had to spell something in yours. So thanks for listening, everybody. We will catch you next week, or we will do a quick review of the 2018 season so far. So thanks for listening, everybody, and have a good one.